Welcome to November. I told everyone when January came that Christmas was right around the corner, and no one believed me. I got a few laughs, but you believe me now. It is almost here. I blinked, and now it's like a year later. But before we skip to that Christmas season, though, there's like a major holiday between now and then, right? That, like, I know the stores are already trying to skip because it's not as easily marketable as Christmas. But Thanksgiving is coming up before Christmas. It's that time that we're supposed to be thankful for what we have. I know it's still several weeks away, but hey, let's do like greeting cards and just skip to whatever next holiday is. But also, though, today is another holiday, too, in many church calendars. Does anyone know what that holiday is? All Saints Day. It's got different practices and different church traditions, but the one that I kind of like, that I'm like, yeah, I'll celebrate that one, too, is when you celebrate all the martyrs who have gone before. All the Christian martyrs who gave up, martyrs, you gave up your life for the faith, all the people who have gone before, you celebrate them on November 1st. And that's worth celebrating, that people had strong enough faith to be willing to give up their lives and follow Jesus in that very literal following of Jesus, of giving up your life. What better time to realize that we should be thankful? So it's kind of like a whole month of thankfulness. The beginning starts with a time to realize we should be thankful for the faith that's been passed down to us, that we can see and we can read in the Bible, that people have died so that we can have the scriptures in the words that we can understand them in, and just to also be in a place where we don't typically have to die to have our faith. That's things to be thankful for here. And the end of the month is thinking about thankfulness, and so I just say let's call the whole month a month of being grateful and have gratitude and be thankful for everything we have. God's provided everything. We should be thankful for that. This month, I'm starting a new sermon series, and coincidentally, it lasts all month and goes a little bit with that thankfulness idea. The series of sermons will walk through the stories that are found in Luke chapter 14, 15, and 16 is what we're going to do. It's just go through those stories in that chapters. And you might ask, Adam, why did you pick Luke chapters 14, 15, and 16? And I will answer you, because I'm asking myself up here. One of the reasons I think they work is because they all have the same exact type of material in all three chapters. It's not like the same stories, it's the same story style. They're all parables in Luke chapters 14, 15, and 16. It's all parables and the surrounding context of those parables. So the style Jesus uses remains the same in all three of these chapters, and so therefore, all of this sermon series will be the same type of material reading out of. Before moving on, I guess I should give the 30-second summary of what a parable is. It's like required that if you mention parable, you have to define it. I think most everyone in this room knows what a parable is, but I'll define it in a way you might not have heard. I just say it, they're like fables. And it's basically the same thing. A fable is a short story intended to convey a point, right? That's very much what a parable is. It's a short story intended to convey a supernatural point. So it's very similar. So think of it like that. Jesus used them a lot. He loved using parables, it seems like. There's more, though. There's another reason why I chose those three chapters. A theme runs through all three of these chapters. It's not necessarily the dominant theme in every story, but it's a theme that is present nonetheless in all of the stories found in these chapters. It's a theme that coincides with that idea of thankfulness. And so I might as well grab on. It's more of the result of thankfulness, though, like what you do with thankfulness. Based off the name of the sermon series, you might be able to guess, Charitable Parables. Can you say that three times fast? I've practiced it a whole lot, so I can say it backwards. I don't know if you should do it backwards. But Charitable Parables, I like it because it's almost like a tongue twister. It's not quite, though. It doesn't really rhyme, but it sort of does. So, like, I like it. Those of you who've been around here for a while, I like tongue twisters. But yes, all of these parables hit on charity in some way. But I don't mean charity in the sense that you're giving alms to the poor. Not that kind of charity. I mean charity in, like, the classic sense of what charity is. More like the King James version of what charity is. 1 Corinthians 13, the passage that's read in every single wedding. It's like, if you're not really married, 1 Corinthians 13 wasn't read at your wedding. Not really, but. And so it's the it's the one that's all about love, and the older translations, such as the King James, translate charity instead of love. It's that being a generous spirit is the loving spirit is what a charity really is. They share who they are as a person. You're generous in nature, not just generous with your money. You're generous as a person. Does that make sense? And all of these parables hit on that same subject as we go through. And so today, let's look at that first parable. Here's that video I was talking about. Have you ever seen McGee and Me? Yeah. Okay. One family. All right. McGee and Me is a treat from the early '90s. Early, like when Christian video was like, just like, hey, we could make Christian movies. they started to make these series, and Focus on the Family made this great series. You're in for a treat. This McGee and Me illustrates this parable, and so I'll let us watch the parable here. And we'll be, no. That is a good little artwork of the parable, I think. I like that. And McGee and Me's like, the kids seem so young, because when I watched it, I was super young. I was younger than that kid, and it's weird to see, if you watch McGee and Me episodes, to see someone you watched was older at the time, and I liked a bunch. It's just weird. But yeah, so that story, Jesus told it, told that story. He was reading directly out of the translation he was using. They illustrated that for you. It's a good little lesson, right? I mean, it's good. Whoever honors himself will be humbled. Whoever humbles himself will be honored is that concept. But let's, if you'd like to follow along, turn to Luke chapter 14. We're going to cover the context of that parable, because the parable starts in verse 7, but we're going to read actually all of everything from verses 1 through 14, because I want to get what's going on before Jesus tells the parable, because that should affect, if it's a short story made to convey a point, the context in which it's found should help us decide what the point should really mean, right? I mean, the parable stands on its own in one sense, but also there's some context, too, that I want to look at here. So please turn to Luke chapter 14, and I'll read it. It should be on the slides as well. And I'll start in verse 1. One Sabbath, when he went to dine at the house of a ruler of the Pharisees, they were watching him carefully. And behold, there was a man before him who had dropsy. And Jesus responded to the lawyers and Pharisees, saying, "Is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath or not?" But they remained silent. Then he took him and healed him and sent him away. And he said to them, "Which of you, having a son or an ox that has fallen into a well on a Sabbath day, will not immediately pull him out?" And they could not reply to these things. The very next verse is when he starts telling the parable and goes into that parable. But first, let's look at what's going on here. It's Sabbath, it says. They're having a meal on the Sabbath day. Does everyone know what Sabbath is? Well, we practice essentially sort of the same thing on Sunday, but they would practice it on Saturday, and the big key of it is you do not work, right? That's the big way they practice it. I'll read what it says in the Ten Commandments about the Sabbath. That's in Exodus 20, but it says, "Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, you or your son or your daughter, your male servant, your female servant, or your livestock, or your sojourner who is within your gates. For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, the sea and all that is in them, and rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy." And so nobody's supposed to be working. Like it says, it even lists, don't your servants work on that day, don't let your cattle work on that day. If there's a foreigner in your land, don't let them work on that day. No one's supposed to be doing anything. But then Jesus sees this man who is sick, and this guy has the swelling, and Jesus says to the guys gathered, he goes, so healing, does that break Sabbath rules or not? And he heals the guy. Like, what would you say if you're asked, does healing break Sabbath rules or not? I don't know. He heals the man. Then Jesus asks them more about Sabbath conundrum sort of situations. And he says, if your child falls into a well on the Sabbath, you're just going to leave him there until tomorrow? Or if you're a donkey, I mean, he's not even a child. Just say a donkey falls in. Are you going to let it sit there on the bottom, possibly with a broken leg and internal bleeding, and so it dies the next day? Are you going to save it right then and there? That's what Jesus is saying. And so he says, yeah, the law says don't work on the Sabbath, but did it really mean don't do anything on the Sabbath? Is the real question that he's making them think about. And so Jesus, knowing he's been being watched by these enemies, knowing they want to trap him, they want to see him break the law so they can get him into that trap, he asks them, what's more lawful? What's God's law really about? What's the actual purpose of the law here? Is it about tediously following your specific interpretation of it, or do you think God could possibly have something different in mind? And he gives them some examples, a living example of healing the person, and then some other examples of maybe there's more to this Sabbath thing than you guys really think there is. Perhaps it's more lawful to help someone than it is to watch them suffer. I mean, I think Jesus would agree with that concept because he heals there. Moving on, though, that's when he tells the parable to illustrate the point of it's more helpful, or it should be helpful on the Sabbath more than not helpful on the Sabbath. He tells this point, verses 7 through 11, which I'll read the parable again even though I can't top the video. Now he told a parable to those who were invited. When he noticed how they chose the places of honor, saying to them, "When you are invited by someone to a wedding feast, do not sit down in a place of honor, lest someone more distinguished than you be invited by him. And he who invited you both will come and say to you, give your place to this person, and then you will begin with shame to take the lowest place. But when you are invited, go and sit in the lowest place, so that when your host comes, he may say to you, 'Friend, move up higher.' Then you'll be honored in the presence of all who sit at table with you. For everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, and he who humbles himself will be exalted." Now, this parable's got an easy explanation. It's don't put yourself first, or you're gonna end up looking like a fool. That's the easy, simple explanation, easy peasy. But then you've got to ask, what does it have to do with the context right before it? Now, our translations put a little subheading in between the two, but the headings, those bold statements that break up chunks of and good flows of thought in the Bible, they're not biblical. They're inserted by the translators because they want to help. It's not like evil, but sometimes it breaks up flows of thought. I really do think that Luke put these things in order for a reason. He didn't just throw stories together randomly. So it's got to have something to do with the context. And you ask, what did that parable have? Did that parable have anything to do with the Sabbath? And not quite, not directly, right? He never mentions the Sabbath in that parable. And so you got to think through it. Thinking through the parable, just talking about the parable, it's when you go somewhere, put yourself in a lower place than what you think you deserve, or realize you don't deserve the highest place. And why? Because one, then you'll get shamed by being demoted, or two, you'd get honored by being lifted up if you put yourself lower on the totem pole. They're good truths, but there's still nothing quite about working on the Sabbath. To avoid confusion, let's move on, though, because Jesus didn't stop there. He added more. He kept talking. Verses 12 through 14. He said also to the man who had invited him, "When you give a dinner or a banquet, do not invite your friends or your brothers or your relatives or rich neighbors, lest they also invite you in return and you be repaid. But when you give a feast, invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, the blind, and you will be blessed, because they cannot repay you. For you will be repaid at the resurrection of the just." All right, do you see how they link together yet? No? Maybe. It's an odd link. Not in a one that's easy to make, but I believe it's there on purpose. First, Jesus helps someone, even though it appears like he's breaking Old Testament law, right? But then Jesus questions their understanding of the law. And maybe it's not to be interpreted in the way they thought. And to prove the point, he tells a story about don't put yourself first. And in case they miss the parable, he makes a command with the point. He says, when you do something good for others, don't do it for people who can repay you. Do it for people who can't repay you. Do good without expecting anything in return, is what he says next. Because by putting yourself behind others, by putting yourself last, maybe, just maybe, you're actually fulfilling what God's law is all about. I think that's what he's saying here. In the book of Hebrews, we see this helps fill in the gaps of the link there. Hebrews chapter 4, verse 9, the whole chapter is about the Sabbath day and how God's people were looking forward to the Sabbath and how whether or not they should have practiced it. And he says, "So then there remains a Sabbath rest for the people of God." So there's a Sabbath we haven't gotten yet. "For whoever has entered God's rest has also rested from his works as God did from his." What do you think "has entered God's rest" means? Died and go to heaven. That's what that means. If you're dead, you're not working on earth anymore. You're in heaven. "Whoever enters God's rest has also rested from his works as God did from his. Let us therefore strive to enter that rest." Not strive to die, but strive to go to heaven is what it's saying. Strive to actually get real rest. Can you ever really rest on this earth? Not unless you just suspend disbelief in reality. I mean, real rest, though, is in heaven. And it's saying the Sabbath was just looking forward to what real rest is going to be. It wasn't real rest when you practice Sabbath. It was just practice for heaven. The real meaning of Sabbath is look forward to heaven. Look forward to how cool it's going to be. The rest of being outside of a cursed world. That would be pretty nice, not being on a cursed earth. That would be great. Because we're built, I think, to be people who take action and work. We're actually meant to be doing things, right? Have you ever gotten restless because you haven't gotten to do anything in a while? We're meant to be doing stuff. We're creative people. We're built to be creative, like God put his image in us and he created the world. I think part of our creativity is that's God's rubbed off on us in that way. So Sabbath wasn't supposed to be so much about don't do anything, which is what some interpretations have said and what they were saying back then, as it was look forward to the heavenly rest God has promised us. And so in the Old Testament, they actually had to work harder on the other 6 days so they could rest on seventh. But looking forward to real Sabbath is you don't have to work harder. You just get to rest. The original law was not don't take action. It was don't toil and suffer on that day. So it's okay to take some action. Hebrews teaches that it was practice for heaven, though. We won't toil there, Because what else won't be happening there? We learn in Revelation is death, mourning, crying, or pain. Those things will all go away, which is great. Jesus practiced a real Sabbath, actually, when he healed a man on that day. He healed a guy, which made that guy gave that guy a better taste of heaven, which meant Sabbath actually went into place. And so Sabbath is more about looking forward to the end of this world's curse. And so perhaps practicing the Sabbath is like the parable Jesus said, is if you can see a way to make this world more like heaven, if you can put other people first, if you can invite people to have a party with you even though they don't deserve it, that's Sabbath because you're making those people get a taste of heaven. I think that's what Jesus was saying. That's real Sabbath, is giving other people a taste of heaven, being generous with who you are, that other people see heaven, and so therefore that's real Sabbath, guys. So if you can see a way to make the world more like heaven, do it. In Jesus' case, it meant heal someone. If it meant us, maybe it means rescuing someone from a well on Sabbath. Even if it means you have to do something, ushering in the kingdom of God is real Sabbath, I think is what he's saying. Because what's more important, is it putting yourself in your relaxation first, or is it more important to give of yourself so that other people can be saved? I mean, there's yourself and your relaxation first is what the people he was dining with were making Sabbath into. They'd even hire people to work for them on that day. So I'll pay you to sin, but I don't have to, is how this was working. And that's not Sabbath. That's not what God had in mind with it. Is it more important to give of yourself so others can be saved, though? And that's what Jesus did. And that ushered in our chance to get to a real rest. And so what's the point of this parable in that context, I think, is be charitable. And charity in the real sense of be willing to be generous with your life. Be willing to put other people first. In the simplest words, it's be kind. Just be nice, be generous. Try to make other people's lives better. Be generous with what you have in your life so you can be generous towards others. Because you shouldn't think of yourself as super high and mighty. Because even if you might happen to have a nice position on this earth, it's God's doing, not yours. Because even if you feel like you built yourself up by your own pulling up on your own bootstraps, he gave you the strength to pull on those bootstraps. He gave you the intelligence to do that. So it's still God's doing in your life. And so use that for other people. Because that's what God's law is all about, serving God by being generous towards others. And so the application for today's sermon then would be nice. Right? be kind, be generous with your life, be charitable, be gentlemen and ladies in the good sense of doing your best to make other people around you feel welcome and better off. Even people that you're tempted to think that are less than you, because the parable teaches us they're not less than you, even if you think that. And the command is they're not less than you. And in fact, anyone who you think is less than you are the people that you should be inviting over to dinner and making their lives better, is what it says. Is if you think you're better than someone else, make their life better. That's what's going on in this. Make their life better. If you think for some reason you're higher, get rid of that feeling. Make them, bring them further up so they're beyond you. The immediate context of the parable is Jesus heals someone. And so think of ways you can bring healing on this world. How do you do that? This is where our modern understanding of generosity comes into play. Not just generous in spirit, sometimes generous with finances as well. Donate to places that heal people. Donate food to Grace. Greater Rolla area charitable enterprises, perhaps. Volunteer with a ministry that serves people, such as that one or others. Give to the missions that Ridgeview supports. Ensure that you're investing in kingdom work. Do things that bring healing on this earth, and physical as well as spiritual healing. So give to Ridgeview Christian Church as well, because that's what God's law is all about, is being generous. Be generous with who you are. Includes your whole life and everything. November is a month about giving thanks. We established that in the beginning, right? November is this thankful month. What better way to give thanks for God than acknowledging that he provided it all? And so saying, I'm going to use what I have to make this world a better place. Even if it puts me on a lower pedestal than I think I should be, even if I have to take a notch down, God owns it all. He can bring me up if he wants to. He can pull me back up. If there's a way to serve God's kingdom with the resources that he has provided us with, if there's a way for us to be generous with his gifts, isn't that really the best way to show gratitude and thankfulness for what you have? Is using it for people who are not you. I mean, that's the best way to be thankful, to show gratitude, is use it for someone else. Here's the cool thing about this. You should be generous to those who can't repay you, but then I haven't hit on the last verse from a passage today. It was verse 14. You will be blessed because they cannot repay you, for you will be repaid at the resurrection of the just. We're not supposed to do it because we get stuff back, but we're still going to get stuff back, Jesus is saying. We're going to get paid back all that and more when we get real rest. when we get real rest, the heavenly rest, when God steps in and fixes everything, it's going to be awesome. And everything that you gave up, God's going to remember, is what it's saying there. You're generous with your life towards others, even though you won't get paid back by those people, because God's going to pay you back in the end. Now, there's actually a cool story in the news this week. I don't know why it was in the news this week, because I learned it happened in, like, March or April this year. But for some reason, it's one of those stories that got, like, resurrected in the news. I don't know why. A preacher in North Carolina decided to donate his kidney. Have you heard about this? His name is Tim Jones. The cool thing about it, though, is during the surgery to remove his kidney, doctors found, he was donating his kidney not to a family member either. He was a very rare blood type match with this other person, so they didn't really know each other. And so he donates his kidney for this person, and in the main artery leading to his kidney, there is a large aneurysm. And so the surgery took 6 hours longer than they thought it was going to, but it saved his life. I mean, that's a good illustration there. You're giving up of yourself, and actually, he didn't think it was going to save his life, but doctors described it as a ticking time bomb. If it would have ruptured, he would have died. And they would never have looked for it. It didn't even show up in the pre-operation scans. Like, they had no idea it was there until they start operating it. And I'm going to go, whoa, we're going to take care of this now. Like, that's a good illustration, right? Giving of himself. He literally gave a chunk, physical chunk of himself to someone else. And it saved his life, even though he wasn't expecting that. That's a good model of how we could do it. How many times do we refuse to be generous because we're worried there's nothing in it for us? But actually, being generous is going to save your life. And that's what Jesus did for us, and it saved our lives, so we should model that. Furthermore, it's a story that reminds us that giving up can save you. Just being willing to go with someone else's needs, being willing to go with what someone else asks of you can end up saving you, which leads me to the gospel, if you haven't followed Jesus Christ, your Lord and Savior, be willing to give it up, because that could save you. And so let's think about these things. Let's be generous with our lives. Let's pray. God, I thank you for this parable in your word that we see that we should not think of ourselves so highly. But let us see what I think is the in context meaning as well that adds to it, that we should not just not think of ourselves so highly, but that we should think of ourselves as agents of bringing about your kingdom, as people who are generous with our lives so that we can, bring about what you would have on this earth, so we can bring about tastes of that true rest that one day gets to happen. May we be generous with everything that we have. Let us go out in this world and find ways that we can lift other people up, that we can put ourselves lower, that we can give of ourselves like you gave. I thank you for examples like that. I ask this all in Jesus' name. Amen.